Welcome to another episode of Managing Change on Internet Blog Talk Radio, your host Ronald Allen. This is home for truly engaging conversation. Managing Change brings you an eclectic perspective on issues that affect you, the individual, the family nucleus, careers, business, and that entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. And yes, a word or two about life's perspectives on managing change for that human touch that drives us to unique heights of accomplishment. Carve out the time every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. for Managing Change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. Now, also here at www.managingchange2.com. Internet radio at its best.
And good morning and welcome to another edition of Managing Change. As we continue our series on the 16th Annual Alliance Mid-Atlantic Conference, which is scheduled for March the 31st in Atlantic City at the Bally's Casino. And no, I'm not a gambler. Life is tricky enough as it is. It will be a serious opportunity to network, gain access, learn knowledge about positioning your company, your services, goods and services, with prime vendors. We've also been speaking with our host, Kathy Dewar from ShowWorks. She's the person, the lady that's bringing us and has been bringing up these events to give us more opportunities in business. Today's program is just as equally filled with information, and I think the gentleman that I have been privileged to have on our program, Mr. Charles Gillian, he is the principal consultant of Global Supplier Diversity Strategies. He has been doing this, helping companies both on the local level and on the international platform since at least 1979. He has held supplier diversity programs for global 200 Fortune 200 corporations. He has administered the supplier diversity program for the fourth largest transit property in the nation. And even more so to his accolades, he has testified before the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights on supplier diversity. Some of you business owners may not realize how deeply rooted this piece of legislation, this opportunity presents itself. And I'm going to certainly ask Charles to develop give us some knowledge about that. He regularly conducts workshops and seminars on program development, federal compliance, and his favorite topic, innovative approaches to increase diversity supplier participation and marketing to the big boys. Today's program is entitled Prepare, Present, Pursue, a methodology for catching the big one. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Ron.
How are
Pleasure
you today,
to be
sir?
Here.
Thank you. And Kathy, my co-host.
Good morning.
And a good morning to you, Kathy.
And Kathy, you know, people may not realize you're what, 3 hours behind us?
I am. I'm in Washington State. It's early.
Yeah.
So I have my coffee
goodness.
Here. But I'm a morning person,
you know,
so it's okay.
Absolutely. We certainly appreciate the relationships you have forged over 30 years. I think it needs to be mentioned a few times because these relationships are sensitive. People have blown out relationships, being too quick or insensitive to the sensitivity of these relationships in terms of forging them and playing the cards the right way. And to that point, Charles, you have helped multiple companies and entities understand this platform. Can you just give us a broad overview to start off with? What is supplier diversity?
That's a broad one. We only have an hour, right? Supplier diversity is a effort to expand a company's or government, you know, government entity's supplier base by utilizing called diverse businesses. In the federal sector, it's small firms owned by women, minorities, veterans, subzones, that sort of thing, is to develop them to a level to become suppliers to the entity. That's in the U.S. If you go to other countries, the definition of diverse business changes.
Charlie, what is, how strong is that commitment on, now we're talking corporations here when we talk mainly supplier diversity today, but what is, how strong is that commitment in U.S.
corporations? I'm going to answer the corporate one by going to the federal government. Federal government has a requirement that if you are a supplier to the federal government, you are required to have a subcontracting plan to utilize diverse businesses for fulfillment of government contract. And the threshold is about $1 million, depending on the classification, that you must have this program. So Corporations find that you, as a term of the contract with the government, they have to have. Many corporations also find, however, that it makes good business sense. Favorite example I like to use is Avon. Avon's target is women. So they have a very, very aggressive women's business program to buy goods and services from firms.
Okay.
That's very interesting, Charles, because when you mentioned certain federal mandates, I had a meeting with some people out in Harrisburg yesterday, and they were talking about other levels of classification. Can you give us some scope? You mentioned women. I know you work with veterans.
Yes.
Can you give us some categories that are of prime and then some programs that support those categories?
Oh, well, we mentioned the women business owners. We mentioned you have minority business owners, and minority has a different definitions. It's the presumptive class plus some other ones. If you can demonstrate with lack of ability towards capital, we have veteran business owners, service-disabled veteran business owners, what's called hub zones, which is historically underutilized businesses. These are companies that are located in what's traditionally a labor surplus area. They can qualify as well. And in the U.S., I think I pretty well hit it. Well, one criteria that is consistent is must be owned and controlled by U.S. citizens. Now, on the private side, we have several affinity organizations that advocate for this. We have the NMSDC, Minority Supplier Development Council. And, Ron, I understand you just recently got your certification on that. Congratulations.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, we have WeBank, the Women's Business Enterprise National Council, NMSDC, WeBank. We have the Veterans Business Organization. It's drawn a blank on that. Anyway, there's a very large Veterans Business Organization as well. But so work with corporations to identify and develop their affinity companies to become suppliers.
If I'm not mistaken, there are also
Native American,
I think there's some Hawaiian, if I'm not mistaken.
There's a classification called Native American.
Okay.
And many of them come into that area.
Yeah, and that would be in the minority sector, yeah.
There's an interesting little caveat, twist on that. Native American corporations, which are, groups of Native Americans living on a reservation, set up a corporation. We see many of them as casinos. Out west, many of these corporations are getting into commercial industrial. They maintain a very large presence.
Many of the concerns that the vendors have for the qualifications of suppliers is capacity, competency, financial, due diligence, speaking to your international experience, Charles. There's the issue on compliance in terms of no child labor, proper protection of employees, whether it's OSHA focused or other regulatory agencies. Can you speak to that in terms of suppliers wanting to come to the table, wanting to be prepared, wanting to present their services, yet are they considered, are they ready?
I tell my buyers when I work with them, never ever award a contract to a firm because they are a diverse business. I say award it because they are the best at what they do. Working with corporations, the employees, these are stockholders. They're corporations. They have a fiduciary responsibility to spend their money wisely, the corporation's money wisely. So the objective, though, is to identify that diverse business and work with them to make them best at what that's what the affinity organizations do, is they offer training, they offer development, they offer those contacts with corporations so that they can develop their skill sets, become viable suppliers. When you go overseas, and you mentioned child labor issues, that's a much, much larger picture. There's a lot of other regulatory issues that look at that. Overseas, the definition of diverse business, as I mentioned, is very, very different. So you have to almost take it by a country-by-country basis.
Kathy, you have been in the business many years. You have seen regulatory changes. You've seen outcry of certain groups trying to form alliances. In your respect, from your perspective, what are some of those challenges that the business owner expresses, and yet they are at fault in the sense of they haven't done their due diligence? We spoke about that earlier.
Right.
What areas have you seen?
Well, again, it's just as you said, we're taking responsibility, and some don't do that. And Charlie mentioned this, that there are companies that get self-certified 8A, or they're a minority business, or they're a veteran business, and then they are frustrated after a while because they're not getting any business. And they're frustrated because I'm a veteran. I'm a minority business. They should be, it's a set-aside. I should be getting that contract. That's a bunch of bunk. You need to be the best, as Charlie said. I don't think just because you are in a set-aside group, if you're a woman-owned business or a Native American company or African-American company, it doesn't make any difference as long as you can, unless you can do the job and prove that you can improve their ROI, the return on investment. So you need to do your due diligence before you're accepted. I think we take too much, some of these folks just take too much for granted and don't make the effort. They think it's going to be an easy out, and it's not. It's work.
Yeah, Ron, if I may,
one big issue.
Run across is the concept of entitlement. I'm entitled to this business.
There you go.
A lot of small businesses will pursue something and say, I'll give it 90 days, I'll give it 180 days. Dealing with corporations, 90 or 180 days is just scratching the surface. The purpose of it is to build a relationship, to build that identification on behalf of the corporation of the abilities of that small business. That's where our alliance really steps in, because it puts that small business in the face of that corporation, makes that introduction, and starts to develop that rapport. And it's up to the small business then to take that and carry it on after that meeting and develop that sense.
It's exactly right. It's a beginning, and we have stories of folks that have come every year for 3 years, and finally the third year something comes out of it. You just have to. There's patience involved. Government and corporate purchasing is not. It's not a 90-day enterprise. It is a 5-10 year process, and you just need to develop your relationships. That's what it's all about. And it, and Charlie and Ronald,
Kathy, I just have to interrupt you a second because we're coming up to our 15-minute past the hour segment. We're speaking with Charles Gillian. He's the principal consultant at Global Supplier Diversity Strategists. He has helped multiple companies, both on the public and private sector, and works in commercial-based programs to help companies facilitate, as we called today's program, prepare, present, and pursue the methodology for catching the big one. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Managing Change. I'm your host, Ronald Allen. And every week, we bring you an eclectic perspective of business owners, corporate executives, and community stakeholders, and share with you their perspective on the challenges in business, life, and just staying focused. We're going to be right back. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Managing Change. I am your host, Ronald Allen, and we do invite you to go to our website, managingchange2.com, where you'll be able to access our community of business owners, corporate executives, and people who are just stakeholders in the welfare of our communities, whether they are business-based, family-focused. And as we know, change itself starts with you, the individual. By all means, share your perspectives on the challenges that you're facing across all the various areas, technology being one. Many of you may know that today, many of the major corporations have now access to being able to use drones. We typically think of drones as those unmanned aircraft that deliver rather nasty weaponry to oppositions. Well, now it's being used across commercial applications. UPS and Amazon have that in place, and they have now a beta testing that seems to be going fairly well. We'll see how that impacts employment, how that impacts our perspective on labor laws. A lot of times, this technology, we seem to welcome it without understanding its full impact, and that's some of the challenges in managing change. Today's guest, Charles Gillian, he is the principal consultant with some 30-plus years in the business of supplier diversity, both public, private, and commercial applications. Our host, co-host, Kathy Dewar, as usual, is helping us learn the many facets of supplier diversity. And what I'm beginning to understand from this is our third interview now, is that it is our perspective. It is our anticipation of securing those contracts. And what drives that, perhaps, is miscommunication. So we're here bringing you the members who are going to be panelists, vendor presenters, and the stewards for the business community, whether you're just fledgling starting out, or maybe you are 10 years and you're looking for new avenues to develop commerce. These panelists are giving you the precursor to prepare for the March 31st conference. This, of course, we're talking about the 16th Annual Alliance Mid-Atlantic Conference being held in Atlantic City at the Bally's Casino. Kathy, you were going to say something just before we went to our break.
Well, I was going to say that I know we're talking about our event, Alliance Mid-Atlantic, but it frankly doesn't matter where you are, what you're going to go to. You should be going to every event where these where the people that you need to meet, the representatives, the from agencies and corporations that you want to do business with. If they're there, you should be there. But you don't just show up. In our event and many others, we have what's called matchmaking meetings, and they are in our case they're pre-scheduled meetings. And there are certain things you can waste a lot of time just sitting there in front of people and talk, or you can really prepare your little speech, and that's what Charlie is. You're an expert because people would come to you, and you know what you want to hear and what you don't want to hear in your previous job. And so this is why we invited Charlie, is because he's going to be doing a presentation called Prevent. What is it? Charlie, tell me what it is.
Prevent, Prepare, Pursue.
There you go.
Marketing
okay.
to large corporations.
So he's an expert because he worked for a large corporation, and he knows what he wants to hear when people are sitting in front of him. So that's why you're here.
Charles, can you give us a view of when you talk about public and commercial-based programs? Can you explain that mm-hmm. for our listeners?
Well, public is government-run, government-based. The most, most recognized is the federal subcontracting program. But you get into a lot of states and municipalities that also have diversity programs. You're located in New Jersey. The state of New Jersey has a supplier diversity program that it's set up within its own guidelines. Doesn't quite match the federal guidelines, but it's addressing the need to identify diverse businesses to support the state's procurements. You also have within New Jersey the Port Authority, New York, New Jersey, the DOT grantees, the airports have supplier diversity programs. That's on the public side. On the corporate side, it's essentially what the corporation is looking for on it. The corporation can pretty well determine what the diverse business classification is. As an example, LGBT firms are included in some diverse business programs and not in other diverse business programs. It's identification of what the market is for them.
I wanted to share this comment, which I just got from someone on Facebook, and they were talking about how do you identify those markets. And I wrote down some quick notes. And can I ask you, Charles, to give us your view on this? And this might help a
mm-hmm.
bit.
Okay.
So what they buy, the corporation, so I'm a vendor. I want to come and offer my services. So one thing I will say is, what do they buy? When do they buy? How do they buy? And would you add other questions that I need to ask and answer before I approach them?
Oh, my goodness. That goes into the prepare issue. For a small business, okay. Going up to a corporation and saying, hi, what do you guys do? That is the kiss of death. You have to demonstrate that you have done your homework beforehand. I tell people, take a look at the annual reports. One of the favorite tools I like to use is Google Alerts. It's essentially a clipping service that will identify anywhere in the world where your company that you're targeting is mentioned in public press. Then you can be up to date on what they're looking for. In terms of what they buy, that's a tough one. It's a matter of market knowledge. What you're looking at, doing your background to see if there is a history in that company to purchase that. I mean, if you're going and selling something, trying to sell something to a company that they don't use, you're wasting their time and yours.
And we talked about that in the last episode, that you have to focus and do your research. And mm-hmm. and it sounds like, Charlie was saying that if somebody comes up and said, what do you guys do? That's more common than you'd think. It's a big mistake.
So
I tell you, one of the biggest mistakes I see is committed by small businesses. A lot of small firms will come up and say, I can save you 20% on whatever it is.
Okay.
You got to think, most corporations have somebody whose career it is, responsibility to buy that particular item, and he's probably making a six-figure salary. And you walk in and say, this person's not doing their job. It's not the way to go.
Okay, so it's communication. It's back to communication. It's knowing how to approach. We talk about, here's another set of phrases, Charles. Reduce risk, save money, increase revenue. And what's the other one? Reduce risk, save money, increase revenue. I know there's a fourth one. Is that the way in terms of approaching and saying to a company, I read your corporate report, I hear what's going on in the marketplace, and I would like to discuss with you some options in addressing these issues? Who would be the right person to connect with?
In terms of a diverse business, one of the first people you connect with is what's called the SBLO, the Small Business Liaison Officer. Within a corporation, it's their job to help you navigate through a corporation. Now, you're talking about, reduce risk, save money, increase revenue, a corporation is risk adverse. It takes a lot to convince them to change. As a small business, you got to think the corporation's buying your service or your product already from the best. What are you going to offer them that is over and above what their current supplier is offering?
So what should you say? You sit down for that meeting. What should you – how do you present yourself?
Oh, one of my favorites is I come out of the pharmaceutical industry. And rather than say, I'm in construction, in the elevator speech, I say, what do you do? The guy says, I'm in construction. Rather than say that, you say, I just built a clean room for XYZ pharmaceutical company. I came in 6 months ahead of time and $2 million under budget. All of a sudden, you're piquing that person's interest. You've saved them money. You've increased their revenue. And in order for them to sponsor you, essentially to usher you into the supply chain on this, you're going to have to make them look good. And you've proven that you can.
Okay.
It's got to be witty.
So it's a little bit of showmanship.
No, marketing, yeah. It is marketing. You can be the best at what you do. If you can't communicate it, you're dead in the water. You've got to be able to effectively communicate it to the right audience.
And you don't start by saying, I'm a small business or I'm a woman-owned business, or you start by saying what you do the best.
Mm-hmm.
What you deliver.
Exactly. Same in a capability statement. You don't want to start with your set-aside approach. You want to start with your what you do best.
Okay. Ron, if I may touch on something Kathy mentioned a couple of minutes ago, is participating in conferences like the Alliance. I tell firms not only just participate and be in the audience, present. Go put together a talk. Talk about your area of expertise. Be recognized as a subject matter expert. So you're not in the audience as a faceless individual. You're on the dais talking. That is how you're going to attract corporations to come to you, because you're a recognized authority.
That's right. So get to know the organizer and the planning committee.
Yes. One of the easiest areas I tell people to look at is SHRM, the Society of Human Resource Management. There's chapters all over the nation, and they hold dinner meetings, and they're looking for interesting people to talk at these dinner meetings. It's a great way to kind of cut your teeth.
He is the principal consultant with Global Supplier Diversity Strategist today on Managing Change, and he's sharing with us his perspectives and experience in helping you position your company. I would say even position your mind, your perspective on how to position your company to win at gaining contracts. It's not just about filling out the paperwork. It's not just about even attending. It's rather understanding how to communicate. Think of it as, and Charles, I'm sure you can weighing on this. Think of it as a date and having to play the right chords.
Let me see. First you hook the horse up to the wagon, the buggy. It's been a long time since I've dated. But it is. It's a dance. Everybody, you're checking out your opponent on the other side, looking for clues, looking for weaknesses, looking for opportunities to go in and develop that relationship. People buy from people that they're comfortable with. And unless you're selling widgets, and, you know, either you meet the spec or you don't meet the spec, it's a trust issue.
It seems that that meeting people and doing business with people that you like is the underpinning of most business relationships. We're speaking with Charles Gilliam. He's the principal consultant at Global Supplier Diversity Strategist, with our co-host today, Kathy Dewar, from ShowWorks. She is putting on her 16th annual Mid-Atlantic Alliance Conference here in Atlantic City at the Bally's Casino. And you're listening to their comments, their observations, and their advice. If you are a small business owner looking to expand, if you are even a seasoned business organization looking to break into government contracts, how do you do it? Should you bring in an intern? Should you go out there and spend some bigger money on a service provider? These are some of the topics we'll talk when we come right back.
Why do I listen to Managing Change with Ronald Allen and guests on blogtalkradio.com? Because I get to hear somebody else tell their story that relates to me. Issues, changes, and accomplishments that affect my life. Whether you're experiencing a career change, going through a family discussion about change, or an entrepreneur navigating the changes in your industry, Ronald's guests share their stories about winning. They bring solutions to bear on your issues. They get me answers to today's challenges in life. That's why I listen. Blogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change in Managing Life's Changes.
Right back. I am your host, Ronald Allen, with Managing Change. We do encourage you to go to our website, managingchange2.com, and see much of the activity that's been going on. We are, of course, going through our various development stages on the website, making it more interactive, bringing you more diverse guests, such as later this week, we are going to have Mr. Raymond Vaccari. He is the director for the Advanced Manufacturing Talent Network Group out of New Jersey. You all know of Jobs for New Jersey. I'm sure you know someone who's looking for a job, maybe someone who is looking to move along in their profession, in their field. This is a gentleman that has extensive knowledge in doing exactly that, and he brings his experience to the advanced manufacturing environment. Today's guest, Charles Gilliam, principal consultant with Global Supplier Diversity Strategists, has worked with multiple private and government agencies across many platforms. He's also testified in front of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights on Supply Diversity. Charles, I'd like to touch on that because, again, business owners may not be aware of its significance. Can you give us some background?
On the civil rights testimony?
On civil rights and supplier diversity.
Well, supplier diversity goes back, I have to say, it finds its genesis in the Civil Rights Act in 1964. It started building upon that, and then there's a whole variety of federal laws that have come in to build. And then it's also the recognition on the behalf of corporations of their consumer base. Who's buying their products, their goods and the services, and the fact that it makes good sense to be able to utilize those firms as suppliers.
I was going to say, how has it matured since its initiation in terms of expansive outreach? Has there been some pushback in certain areas because of the need for high education, high technology applications, or just back to, as you say, it makes good sense, but who's monitoring it?
Oh, on the federal level, it is monitored by the individual agencies. When you sign a contract with the federal government, you agree to a series of goals for subcontracting with them on it, and it's regularly audited by the feds. One of the beauties of the federal contracting area is a prime contractor, a large corporation, will push those goals down to their suppliers, whose suppliers will push it down to other suppliers. So that actual spend requirement ripples down through many, many levels to a point where you may not know that you're operating on a federal contract, but it's still a goal, an opportunity. It's not a carte blanche, I have to say. It's not a giveaway program. What the program does is give exposure to those diverse businesses, gives them that first pass, that opportunity to go eyeball to eyeball, just like Kathy talks about in the matchmaking that's done. You're going to be going eyeball to eyeball with the Corps of Engineers procurement people to develop that relationship and then convince them. Because a small, diverse business is going to be competing against other small, diverse businesses.
And, Kathy, can you share your perspective on how it's impacted your business and how you've seen it help other companies?
You're talking about supplier diversity?
With supplier diversity in reference to that civil rights, bringing supply diversity under its umbrella and legislating the need for companies to think more inclusively. Let's use that phrase.
Well, in a sense, that's why we exist. We are there to match or connect the small businesses, whether that no matter what if they're diverse or not, to the federal, state, local government agencies and large corporations. I mean, that's why we're there, and we know that if there were no mandate or if there were no considerations for the need to use diverse suppliers, we probably wouldn't be in existence, because that's what we focus on. We market to hub zones, to minority businesses, because it's just good business. I mean, it's the way we should be doing business, and that's why we're there. That's why we're there.
Charles, you mentioned
Yes.
that in your talk, prepare, present, and pursue. We spoke about the first two, prepare and presenting, and you gave us a nice twist there. It is a dance. It is a courting. It is it's funny when I said the word courting. There's a little jingle. As a kid, we say, a frog went a-courting, and he did ride. But I won't say anything more, because I might get into trouble with that. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, it is a dance. It is a sensitivity of how that company wants to be approached and to be pitched, and how you can work yourself into the fabric, as opposed to being a salesperson knocking on the door saying, would you want to buy a widget? Can we talk a bit about pursuing? Many companies, once they get past the frustration of all the paperwork and they begin to understand the nuances of communicating with those entities that they wish to provide their services with, they may fall off the track. As I believe, Kathy, you said earlier, it's not a 90-day. It's not a short-term courting. It's a long-term. It might take 2 years. Can we talk about pursuing that aspect of your talk on March 31st?
Oh, absolutely. Pursuing is probably the most delicate area. It's not picking up the phone and saying, do you have anything for me today? You can become a pest very, very quickly. Pursuing is to develop that relationship, to carry that initial first date, that elevator speech, that opportunity, and build upon that. I encourage firms to keep in touch with their points of contact, give them some information about how they're growing, and so that target company can see how they're bettering their capabilities. Love to use an example. I was dealing with a very small woman-owned business. It's only three people. It was much too small for us because the scale of what we were looking for. I told her to keep in touch with me, and we watched this woman grow over several months, a couple of years actually, in her emails that she was sending to us. It effectively branded her with my category manager. He knew of her when I would forward the emails to her. One day, she sent me a white paper that she had presented to a medical school. The guy looked at it and said, you know, she's good enough for this medical school. Maybe we ought to talk to her.
Wow.
Now, that took about 5 years to go from beginning to actually getting a contract. But it was a wonderful building on that. The beauty of it is, and people say, you know, I can't devote 5 years to it. The beauty of it is anybody that comes in to unseat her is going to have to go through that same gauntlet. So the harder it is to go up, the harder it is for your competitors to catch up with you.
To talk about that comment when the newbie comes onto this market platform and says, I don't see myself hanging in there for 3, 4, 5 years, then I think they need to be educated that the average company doesn't survive 8, 9 years. And if you do, and there's an economic downturn, I believe it's 70% don't survive the downturn. So if you think 5 years is a long time, look at the companies that have been successful, survived 10, even 20 years, and because of 2007, 2008, 92, 1975, when the British pound was devalued, they're wiped off the face. So I think, to your point, Charles, yes, it is a seemingly a long road. The question needs to be asked or framed, are you in it for the long haul, or are you just a flash in the pan?
Absolutely.
It
cost the corporation a lot of time and money to change vendors. And they want to have a high degree of confidence that new vendor will be around. And part of that time period is to test the mettle of the company.
Kathy, you have been around 30 years. Give us your perspective.
That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
I started as a young lass.
Yes, very young. You know, this type of business, I'm thinking government procurement, it's not like a retail business where you really have to make it in 6 months or a year. We have changed, the show works has changed, starting from public shows, RV shows, boat shows, and moving into government procurement. We had the trade shows. We did a mining show for 20 years. And I guess the focus that we've had to change focus, and we've had to change every 3, 4, 5 years with federal procurement. You know, the legislature, the Congress makes a lot of changes and affects millions of people, and it affects my business as well. So it's just a matter of change and staying around and making new decisions and making new connections, and that's what everybody has to do if you're going to stick with it. But yes, I've seen changes in 30 years, big ones.
Charles, you mentioned earlier that you're unseating an existing or an incumbent.
Yeah.
And the vendor is not going to go easily into the night, quietly into the night. So what about other strategies? I mean, I'm not ready to walk away with my little tools and say, oh, I it's not going to work. I'm not disturbed with 5, 10-year commitment because I'm in it for the long run. What about positioning yourself as a subcontractor? What about looking at micro or small business purchases that I can more readily access? And thirdly, what about the set aside, which may be much smaller, yet I can latch on and perhaps get a little bit more than a crumb and a nail filing to eat and feed my family?
No, set aside, let's touch on that first. There is no such thing as a set aside in corporate environment. Set-aside is a government term.
Mm-hmm.
There are restricted areas. Even in the set-aside, the 8A program on the federal government, you are competing with other firms, other diverse businesses that are doing the same thing you are. So it's still a competition. that you have to go through. You just have to prove you're the best of the lot. And if you're dealing in a corporation does not necessarily do open bidding like the government does. The government will advertise something and you download the specs and you say, yes, I can do it. Frequently, a corporation is going to invite you to bid. That means you have to develop that relationship, develop that level of expertise that they're working in. When you talk about smaller pieces, you know, there's a real tendency to bundle requirements that come in. That's where subcontracting becomes a very, very viable option, that instead of competing against somebody with a corporation, you become part of their team and do your area of expertise as a sub. That's where you can wind up cutting your teeth. I spoke with a small business recently that had been a subcontractor to a major corporation. The contract had expired. The corporation liked what the subcontractor was doing, and that firm is still in-house, while their vendor is no longer there.
Charlie, I don't know if he'll agree with you, but I think a company that goes into this thinking that 100% of their business, they want 100% of their business to be with the government or large corporations, might be making a mistake. It should be start with a percentage and just try to get the small contracts first and get your experience and your capabilities grown, and then use the private sector as part to get you going, keep you going, and keep trying to grow your government.
I tend to agree with you. The government is come around. They have certain procurement levels where they can be very autonomous in awarding the small procurements. I think it's, don't hold me to the number, but I think it's $10,000. If a requirement is under $10,000, the contracting officer does not necessarily have to put it out for bid. They can look at the...
I think it's $25,000 in some cases.
That could be.
So.
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the category.
So those are
but
easier...
Yes,
those
there
are
is
good,
an opportunity to get
start.
The smaller bids with the government.
And those add up.
Mm-hmm. That goes back to walking the halls, getting to know that person. You need the small business needs that government contracting officer to know who they are, not only just getting on the Federal Register so that the contracting officer can pull the name out of the database, but have that contracting officer know who you are, know what your capabilities are, so that they will pick you.
So face-to-face is obviously the best, as they say, pressing the flesh. Charles Gillian is our guest today on Managing Change. We're talking about all things supplier diversity, certainly on the corporate side, and he is one of the panelists at the March 31st conference, the Alliance Mid-Atlantic Conference, which has been held at the Bally's Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, March 31st. Our co-host, Kathy Dewar, is the event planner, the host of this annual conference. We're talking about supplier diversity. We've spoken about your personal perspective and what you anticipate to secure these contracts. We're talking about the need to be prepared to do due diligence. That's come up repeatedly. We now have interjected the flair of dating. What is the how does that company wish to be approached? How can you work with this company? So we're going to be right back in a moment as we take a little break. We do ask you to go to our website, managingchange2, that is a numeric 2 at the end there, .com, and see what's going on in our community of you, the individual. We know that change starts with you, the individual. If you do not wish to change, the pushback can be somewhat severe. And we've seen that in corporations. We know that in most cases, new projects are only embraced by maybe 45-50% if they're fortunate. And then there's another level. How do you actually utilize the new methods, technology, the process? And unfortunately, that can be even lower in some cases. And we've seen through the ProSci research, which is the method that we typically use here on Managing Change, that 60-65% is what it seems to max out at. What does that mean? It means that we need to do our homework. It means that we need to present to to our employees and have them engaged in the process. And that's what we're doing today. And we will continue with a series of interviews so that when you go to the Mid-Atlantic Conference, you'll be better prepared, you'll have better expectations, and you will align what it is that you're offering with the companies that you wish to secure. You're listening to Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back. We're back with Managing Change. I am your host, Ronald Allen. And our guest today is Charles Gillian. He is the Global Supplier Diversity Strategist who has some 30-plus years in the field working with as a subject matter expert with both public and private entities. He's also worked overseas. And Charles, I'd like to touch on your experience, please, regarding the Supplier Diversity UK. Can you give us a little bit of background on the organization and the work that you did with
Okay. So Supplier Diversity UK is actually the international branch of the National Minority Supplier Development Council. They've developed a presence within the UK to be able to support the corporations that are operating there. And they're using roughly the same definition of a diverse business. On a broader part, though, the UK is part of the European Union. The supplier diversity is alive within the European Union as well. They meet a great deal of challenge, though, because what's considered a diverse business in Norway is not particularly the same as it is in Italy. So there's very much of a challenge to be able to identify a common ground.
Charlie, are those those are international companies that adhere to that as opposed to their local large companies?
You're right, Kathy. It's right now the penetration has been with the multinationals that are dealing with the European Union.
Okay.
There is a real push, though, for the government procurements to be able to identify the diverse businesses and buy from them as well.
So it's coming.
Eventually it's coming. There has to be some changes in the laws, though.
Okay.
Yes, Ron.
Charles, you also worked with the Supplier Diversity Pharmaceutical Forum. Can you tell us what kind of issues presented and what kind of possible solutions have been developed or are still being developed to address those issues?
Oh, the Pharmaceutical Forum Supplier Diversity Group is part of the Institute of Supply Management. It's one of the committees on that. It's comprised of the supplier diversity program managers from probably 8 or 10 of the largest major pharmaceuticals within the world. We benchmark with each other. We talk about quality requirements. We trade firms, which is a very, very important area. One of the things that the Pharmaceutical Forum, I no longer belong to it because I'm retired out of it, but would discuss the capabilities of businesses and what to be able to emphasize. I'd say the pharmaceutical people do not consider themselves to be competitors to each other. If you're looking for a firm to do a specific area that's pharma related, people would not hesitate to pick up the phone and call their counterpart at another pharma and say, what are you doing with this? It's a great, great area to be able to identify available businesses. Within the pharmaceutical industry, because of the high, high regulation, it's a very difficult industry to penetrate. But we need to be able to work with each other to do that.
I see on your LinkedIn profile that you have Japanese as a second language. Can you give us some background as to what your interest? Why were you drawn to
the language?
Well,
actually, that's not quite correct. English is my second language.
English is?
Yes. I was born and raised in Japan. I came here to go to university and have been here ever since.
Really? I did not know that.
Oh, there you are. My mother, when she was alive, said with great disdain that I spoke Japanese with an American accent.
They are very particular. They are very particular. Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
I know the French also despise other dialects and uses of the language. So how has that helped you in your international business relations?
Well, in terms of supplier diversity, not so much. I have to say I've gotten away from that. But when I was in procurement, the organization that I worked with bought a great deal from the Orient. So I wound up using my Japanese quite a bit on that. You find that within the Pacific Rim, if you're dealing with somebody whose English is not particularly good, the trade language, the fallback trade language, is usually Japanese.
Okay. Now, I know in China there are many dialects, and we typically think of, oh my goodness, my brain just went totally dead, the two main languages, but there are many others. Is that also true in Japan?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to say that there's quite a variety. There are some accents, northern and southern, but Japan is such a small country, an insular. I have not run into that.
And the reason other than I asked that, Charlie, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Other than speaking it with an American accent,
it's your mother still reverberates in your mind, which is great. I love it. So who has the dog? We have to identify the dog. There.
That's me. I have three dogs in my office, and somebody walked by in the window.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. They're a little yappy. The biggest one's 12 pounds. That's the only thing they can do is bark.
That's quite all right, Charles, because part of managing change is exactly that. And I know a lot of people say, well, it's business. To that point, I have my wife downstairs sitting with the dog so they don't bark because people are constantly walking by. Kids are going back and forth to school. And then in terms of business itself, we have bring our dog to work a day. The whole industry has come up in supporting our best friend. I mean, you've got restaurants in Philadelphia that cater to dogs. If I'm not mistaken, it's a $90 billion industry, not just with veterinary care, but with the food, the clothes, and now with restaurants. So in managing change, I think we need to give ourselves some space. When we are dealing with such serious concerns, paying the mortgage, securing that contract, having someone at least appreciate our skill set, going up against a competent adversary in the marketplace. And when we come away and understand that our other elements in our life fulfill us, support us, and give us balance. So I appreciate that opportunity. Very rarely, Charles, do I have a chance to bring in the other elements of someone's life into the interview, and so I appreciate that.
Let me give you an example. I can tie the dogs into supplier diversity. One of the techniques that I try to work with corporations on is to expose their employees to small diverse businesses. Case in point is I work my veterinarian is a woman. Now she's not going to be in a position to become a supplier to a corporation, but if she can get exposure to the corporation's employees, that's a huge, huge benefit for her. So one of the things I talk with people about all the time is, if you can't sell to the corporation, see if you can target the corporation's employees. Most corporations have a bulletin board system, electronic bulletin board system, within, you know, within their intranet, which is, you know, frequently used for people to sell things, you know, like a Craigslist almost. I've seen people take that and elevate that over and above to be able to expose the diverse businesses within the community to the employees. And a dollar to a small business, whether or not it comes from a corporation or an individual, is still a dollar.
I need to ask you to clarify that. You're saying take the intra bulletin boards that most of these corporations have and
mm-hmm.
position your services as an outside vendor?
Whoever's in charge of that bulletin board. You can get the supplier diversity person involved in that to be able to post advertisements on your behalf within that system. The way I initially did it is, you know, we would post the ad, it would go to 5,000 people. The last line on the advertisement would say, you know, my corporation welcomes this veteran-owned business, this minority-owned business, this, you know, woman-owned business, so that it was featured within the entire corporation that we are trying to support and expand the exposure of diverse businesses. I have to say that in terms of getting audited by the federal government, I touched on that earlier, this is an outreach,
really?
A creative solution that they absolutely loved.
Interesting.
That's very unique, right, Kathy?
It is. I don't know that the federal government has the same thing, but that's a great idea, and it actually helps with outreach goals.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yes, it adds to the anecdotal evidence of outreach. You really can't track the dollar spend on it, but it goes a long ways to show that you are supporting the business community as a whole, not just the ones that can sell stuff to you.
So you can approach them with that in mind and then elevate it to social media awareness, which has somewhat of a cachet. They have some entities that measure return on investment on social media interaction.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I hope that.
And
audience...
I usually ask them for some kind of discount for my employees, some kind of promotion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's very unique. Again, it's the niche. It's the niche within the niche. It's not always going for the home run, whereas we know most games are won first base, second, third, etc. Although I play cricket, but that's okay.
No, you're absolutely right. We had situations I remember where, you know, an employee would use a firm's services, and that employee's spouse would be working for another corporation, and all of a sudden they get an intro into that other corporation. It's a leapfrog effect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kathy, I want you to come in on this one, because I'm looking at Charles's awards and his years of service, and I see that he has positioned himself well with the relationships of those he serves and the advocates, ombudsmen that support our industry. Now I'm certainly part of the industry. Just doing a little halo here. I survived. I think it's 2 years, actually, Charles, now. 2 or 3 years that I've actually invested. My wife and I have invested. I have to include Miriam because she's an incredible support system. We have invested in this, and we are going for the long run. In looking at your awards, what would you share with the business owner that you have learned from these relationships, from being recognized, that they could begin to cultivate and carve out other opportunities, just like that golden nugget you just gave it?
Well, now, prime example, I wanted to bring this up. I touched on it earlier. You just got certified by the NMSDC, the National Minority Business Council, correct?
Yes.
That is a prime opportunity to do a press release, an email blast to every person you absolutely know. It's not just, hi, how are you? You know, do you have anything for me? I'm announcing that I am now certified. I'm legitimately identified as a minority business. That's a very tangible item. You get it out to absolutely everybody you know. And you'll be amazed what, you know, what kind of response you're going to get off of that.
Okay. Okay. And
some people...
No, go ahead, please.
And I'm going to say you have some people that, you know, they're going to receive it and say, you know, what's EMSDC? They ask the question and say, oh, I know who this needs to go to within the company. Shoot it out to them.
Mm-hmm. Ah, there you go. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Oh, yeah. An email blast like that has a history of getting a lot of mileage. I really recommend trying, you know, giving it a shot.
So, Ronald, you need to go to every event that EMSDC has that's going to have corporations available so you can talk to them, introduce yourself, get to know them. That'll keep you busy.
Well, you know, guys, I'm glad you said it that way, Kathy. I'm not a social butterfly in that respect. When I go to events, if I speak to four people, I'm exhausted.
Exhaust yourself, Ron.
I'm sorry.
That's it. You're building that. You're building that relationship.
Yeah.
Specifically, I'm going to say specifically for you, for where you're located, I would recommend looking at the Minority Business Council of New York, New Jersey. You
mm-hmm.
look at the corporations
mm-hmm.
on that, it reads like the Fortune 500. That is going to be a target-rich environment for a small business.
If you're serious about this, and we talk to everybody about this, you need to go to as many events, wherever they're going to be, your targets are going to be, that's where you need to be. And you may need to exhaust yourself. These events, for example, we'll have Alliance Mid-Atlantic, we'll have 50 matchmaking tables. So even though maybe 20 of those companies or agencies are your target, you need to be hitting every one of those. So you will be exhausted.
Well, the reason why I say it in that fashion, guys, is because when I say I talk to four people, I'm going deep. I'm talking about the economic implications on their company. I'm talking about what I've read on the mm-hmm. Google alerts. And by the way, Charles, thank you for reinforcing my 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning read. That's when I read them. That's the best time for me to read them. It's retention. That's why I read them at that time of the morning. And then when I go away, I have notes. I have a process of following up with people. So, you know, it's nice to have the speed dial and the speed networking. I just forget people. I have to write notes. I have to associate one with another. Or, for example, our conversation today, you know, we spoke about dogs and it seemed to be a total tangent, but it's not. Some of your language, Kathy, learned something. So that's the sensitivity that I bring and then develop that because people recognize, you know what, this person cares. So to your point earlier, Charles, yes, they realize that I'm committed and I'm serious and that I want to do business on their level. That's what, you develop and that's what's important. I also see, Charles, by the way, something that you and I enjoy, fishing. I'm in Burlington County, Pemberton, which is made up of a whole bunch of lakes. I consider it the secret of Burlington, and if Donald Trump ever found us, none of us could afford the real estate because he would, you know, $1 million for 100 by 100 square foot in front of a lake, which they're all beautiful lakes. They really are. Fishing, how does that help you?
Oh my!
Oh my goodness! I'm down in Lower Slower Delaware. Lots of ponds in this area. You touched at the beginning of our conversation. You touched on drones. Now let me tie that in. I recently purchased a drone, and I've hooked a clip to it. I surf fish quite a bit. I really enjoy surf fishing because I'm right next to the ocean here. I can cast out 40, 45 yards. I have a drone now. I can clip my line to the drone and take it out 200 yards and drop it. And I have to say, it attracts a lot of people. People come over and start talking to you about it, and you build rapport and a relationship with them.
Are they expensive?
Well, it's relatively speaking, no. Yeah, there's a few bucks. But although the last year, I think the prices have really dropped substantially. And if you're nice to me, I'll teach you how to make that clip. It's homemade.
Aside, I think I mentioned this in our first program, but one contracting officer was trying to make a decision, and he had two companies that were, there were no differences between them. He couldn't make a decision. And then he realized that one of the companies he had talked to at a reception or networking event, and they talked to each other because they have the same type of dog. And that was the only determination between the two, the only significance that he could find. He got the contract, the one with the dog. So you just never know when that networking opportunity, that relationship makes a difference.
That's building that rapport, getting comfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right.
Silly things, but work.
And it's amazing, guys, with all the technology and the access to millions and millions of people, people, even on LinkedIn, still don't say why they wish to connect with you. They use that blasé text, let's connect.
Oh, the default text.
I know it. I hate
default
that.
Text. Yeah. And I say, why? Have you looked at anything on my profile to say, guess what? Can we talk about something? So, Charles, you have been an incredible resource today. Literally, in the last 10 minutes, I think we have learned how to strategize as suppliers, how to position ourselves, how to come to that table prepared. And then, as Kathy, you mentioned, many times it's the earnest observation of someone's likes, interests, hobbies that connects us. And if we give it a little time, I think those seeds will blossom and we'll get the rewards. Now, there's another side to that, which is longevity. Again, Charles, to your point, you say pursue that target after making that pitch. That's absolutely crucial. Charles, what do you want to say to businesses preparing for this event, and what do you feel you want them to walk away with?
Oh, my goodness. Bring lots of business cards.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Get them in front of people. That's one good way to remember. I always tell companies three words: be the best. Talk to people. Tell them how you are the best at what you do. Somebody comes in and says, I do this too, that literature, that information is going to go in a circular file. But if you come in and say, I do this the best and this is why, that's when somebody's going to remember you.
Kathy, my co-host, what is our takeaway for today's theme?
I would say make sure that you are ready to talk to these folks. Be ready. Don't just show up. You spend your money. Do your research. Our website lists everybody that's going to be there. If you haven't paid attention to that, you're missing out. So bring your capability statements, bring your business cards, and bring your pitch.
And how can people get in touch and register for the event, Kathy?
The website is www.alliance4biz, F-O-R-B-I-Z. And if you want a personal conversation, I'm at 509-838-8755.
Charles Gillian, our guest for today. He is the senior consultant at Global Supplier Diversity Strategist. He has been a true wealth of knowledge, true technical stuff that we can walk away with. My wonderful co-host, Kathy Dewar, thank you very much. I look forward to our next set of interviews. Charles, thank you again for your time.
Well, thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen, on Internet Blog Talk Radio with guests providing their perspectives about you, the individual, the family nucleus, your career, your business, and your entrepreneurial spirit, life's perspectives about managing change. Join Ronald and guests every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for another episode about managing change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Remember, the program is now showcased on managingchange2.com, where you can search for your favorite guest interview or get in touch with them and start a chat, enter their forum, or start your own public or private group to engage others in managing change. Catch Managing Change internetblogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Be seeing you.